I never graduated high school, never went to college. I never have had a plan. You know, I need to quit my job. I didn't have a job. Those are the things that Nashville really teaches you.
You're making this up.
You're just playing LaGrange with Billy Gibbons. You got to put it into fifth or sixth gear.
Today's episode is sponsored by Gator Cases. Guitarists, like any other musician, value the advantages of proper protection for their gear. Guitars, amps, effects, and accessories all need safe transport and storage. Luckily, Gators got you covered. Love that. Guthrie Trapp back on the podcast. Dude,
happy to be here, man.
You've been on this show more than anyone. You've been
unbelievable.
This is your fourth appearance.
We're gonna get it right this time.
What do you mean? This time where I have to keep bringing him back because every time he comes on, it never works out.
No.
Four times on the show. Incredible. This is the fourth time. I've known you longer than anyone, dude.
Amazing.
So our friendship is what, almost done, basically?
It's wrapping up.
It's wrapping up, yeah. Dude, 2025 has just kicked off.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think about a new year? Your business, your playing, your schedule, your calendar. How do you think about kicking off a new year?
Well, yeah, just, you know, trying to keep the momentum and motivation and inspiration alive, which is going to be easy because 2024 was a hellacious year. It was awesome. And you know, a nice little holiday break. And then, man, you know, just rock right into 2025. We have no other choice. We've got to keep going.
So how do you think about the business of Guthrie Trapp in the new year? Are you planning out the whole year? Do you leave stuff open for things to pop up? You're flying to Hawaii next week with Billy Gibbons. How do you plot all this stuff out?
Yeah.
And what do you think about?
Well, to add a little bit of insight to that, to go a little bit, you know, to preface that a little bit, I will say that one of the things, and I'm kind of proud of this at this point, but, you know, I never graduated high school and never went to college. I mean, that wasn't an option. And that's a pretty common thread through a lot of musicians and artists, of course. But, you know, I never have had a plan, you know, here. I never had a plan.
What do you mean you never had a plan?
Well, so I knew what I wanted to do, but I didn't.
Which was what?
Was to be a musician.
That was it.
To make a living.
But what did that mean to you?
Be a lifer musician, you know? And so when I got into this as a kid, you know, I didn't know, there was no choice of like, well, you know, I need to quit my job. I didn't have a job. I started playing music so young and making a living at it, it just kind of all was laid out in front of me, you know? And so, luckily, my family, you know, has great taste in music. My parents are still alive and well. And you know, just I was raised in a very conducive environment, musically and creatively conducive environment, you know, and a lot of support. And so I never wavered from that, just knowing, you know, I knew as a kid that there was something that I wanted, you know, way out on the horizon. To just be a musician, whatever that meant. You know, I wanted to be G.E. Smith on the Saturday Night Live band, who I ended up working with last year, as this was like another dream come true, you know, working with and befriending one of my heroes, which has happened in Nashville, you know, year after year. Living the dream in Nashville is a reality, you know, and you know that. You came here and look what you're doing. You're crushing it and interviewing all these world famous and amazing musicians. And I'm not putting myself in that category.
No,
No, but I'm just saying, I mean, that this is a place where dreams come true. And I'm not trying to sound like this, not like I don't work for the Nashville Chamber of Commerce or tourism department, but it is. And that's why, I mean, I've had some dark times here, but the graph has always trended upwards. And so I think that's what you want to, you're going to have some ups and some downs, but as long as the graph trends upwards over time and those peaks and valleys even out and trend upwards, I think you're going to be okay. But I never had a plan of like, okay, well, I'm going to go from A to B and to C. It was just like, I knew I wanted to get from A to Z, this big arc to the end of it. And I saw people's careers and kind of how I would kind of, you know, model mine after. I had no idea how to get there. I just knew, you know, gravitate towards good music, good people. Don't try to copy anybody else. Don't try to chase. And these are things I had to learn in the first 10 or 15 years of living here. If somebody's really successful and you try to copy them, you're going to end up going down a dark path that eventually, hopefully, you're going to realize that you have to adjust, make some adjustments at that point, because that's going to reveal itself. You know, whoever we want to be like, they're already doing it better than anybody else on the planet. You know, everybody's heard all these inspirational quotes, you know, like, okay, well, there's only one Zach Kuhn, and he's doing it better than anybody else on the planet ever will.
Wait.
That's true.
For all my guitar players out there, if you want the exact licks that Guthrie is playing throughout this video, they are all tabbed out and on my Patreon. Link in the description to check it out. You can subscribe, get all these licks under your fingers, and impress your friends. All right, back to the show.
Some of the people when you moved here that were in the prime of their careers that you were looking up to?
Well, like my friend Tom Bukovac, you know, and guys like Rob McNally, who, you know, I'm talking about session guitar players. Because that's what my world is guitar. And of course, we'll get into some other things if you want to, about kind of like how, you know, kind of building some career and being diverse and all those things that we were kind of leading up to here. But, you know, those guys are career guitar players and they're session musicians. And so when I moved to Nashville, you know, the brass ring was being like the big session guy. And you feel like, well, that's who everybody's talking about, and he's considered the best, or, you know, he being any given person in that decade or whatever. It was Brent Mason, it was Reggie Young, it was Tom Bukovac, it's Rob McNally, it's like all these guys that are doing these big records and winning ACM Guitarist of the Year, CMA Awards, and all that stuff. And so I chased that for a minute and had a little run of doing some sessions, and I'll still do some recording and stuff, but I wasn't really good at that. That wasn't my bag. I wasn't good at being a chameleon and keeping up with all these different popular, you know, forms of music. And my brain just wasn't wired that way. And I didn't learn how to do that, you know? And so I realized that I had to learn that going down that path of chasing and being pressured in a way put on by myself of living in a town like this, where if you come here and you really don't know who you are yet, don't just run to another city, because it's not the city, it's you. It's not the location on planet Earth, it's you.
You might suck in every city. So you have to work on yourself.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
That's the takeaway.
You got to figure out who you are. And it took me 4 or 5 years. I said I worked on that for 10 or 15 years. Well, yeah, we've been through that. But there was a good 3 or 4 years where I was really like, you know, I'm going to get all these pedals and I'm going to get these amps and all this shit, you know, pedal session stuff. And I had a little run of doing some sessions on Music Row. But, man, I wasn't good at the politics. I wasn't good at...
are the politics? What do you have to do to politic in those sessions?
I wasn't good at telling people their songs were great every day when I didn't think they were great. Because to me, my integrity is it's all about the music. And it really is. I mean, I've been lucky to build an awesome career here and a very satisfying one. And at this point, happier than ever because it's taken a long time, but to get everything under one umbrella where you are kind of in charge of your own schedule, you're doing the things that you've built that allow you to make a living and not sacrifice your artistic integrity. And so when I see young people in Nashville, I'm going to be 46 years old February 3rd, which is coming up in less than a month. you know, when I see young people, and I can say that now, even though I'll always be young at heart. But when I see like a young guitar player or a young musician or a songwriter or an artist in Nashville that's 20, you know, in their early 20s, and they've already kind of figured out who they are, and they're just writing songs and making great music for them, that there's nothing more satisfying in the world. I love seeing that. It's so inspiring because I'm like, man, this person, it's like, yeah, man, you want to root for them and be a cheerleader because you're like, they've figured it out and they're not letting anything steer them away from that. And those are the ones that are going to end up being successful, not only in business and in their music careers, but in life and their own happiness, you know? And so the ones that come to town and this is kind of a, you know, broad statement, exaggerating or to emphasize a point, but there's been a lot of people that have blown in and out of Nashville and they don't commit and they go to New York for 6 months and then they come back and they're here for a minute and they might do some recording and they complain about this isn't good enough for them or whatever. Then they go to Austin, then they go to LA and they never really land anywhere. They're kind of running from something, you know, and we know that. And so when you come to Nashville and you can really commit to this town for a while, those are the people that we end up forming these amazing relationships with because we're kind of like all part of this, you know, it's not a club, it's an alliance, it's a community. It's really a community. And we know where we fit in the food chain and we're not jealous of anybody and we're not competing for anything. It's like once you get past all that shit that I had to go through, then you come out on the other side of it, man, and you're nothing but just inspired at that point. And so I'm not saying I'm doing anything incredible, but for what I do in my little corner of the guitar world, I'm doing exactly what I came here to do, you know, and it's extremely satisfying. So that was another point there that I was going to make, but I can't remember what it was.
Okay, but how do you think about, because you mentioned it, how do you break down your business and you do the guitar courses with Artist Works, you tour, you record, you play with other people.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think about those things strategically or do they all just kind of happen and you schedule them and you go?
Yeah, kind of just go. So, I had 2024 was an awesome year. I mean, it was really busy. It was exhausting, but man, we did a lot of stuff in 2024. And so with that momentum, with the record that I did with Uncle Larry, Tom Bukovac, we did the record in stereo and we played some live shows and we did some stuff with the trio and, you know, there was a nice well-rounded thing in 2024 that started growing in 2023. And so obviously, you know, those things are kind of sequentially growing, hopefully. But so towards the end of 2024, when we were looking back on that year and kind of looking at, okay, well, what's 2025 going to be like? The calendar started filling up. And so, okay, well, there's some, you know, rolling into 2025 after a nice little holiday break. I mean, shit, it's slammed rolling into 2025 with some really fun stuff. I'm leaving. And we didn't really plan that. You know, nothing's booked, you know, more than a couple months ahead of time, you know, some education things and some clinics and stuff like that. There's a few little spots on the calendar that are earmarked for those things. But I mean,
you're making this up. You just go week by week.
You're going week by week and you're not looking, you're not really looking. And somebody said this, I think it might've been Dan Dugmore on one of Uncle Larry's videos. And he goes, look, musicians, if you look at the calendar, you're going to freak out because there's nothing booked ahead of time. But if you look back, you'll see that all those years you've worried about were all ended up being full, you know? And so, yeah, I just kind of go with blind faith, man. I try to go with, you know, things that I want to do. Don't make more work for yourself that's not productive, you know? Keep your focus, but don't get rigid, you know? Let things come in from the peripheral. If you're too laser focused and you're too planned and you're too analytical about your music career, then you're eliminating things coming in from the peripheral. And so I want random shit to come in. I'll thrive on that. It's like, hey man, I want the random phone call from somebody to, hey man, let's go down to, you know, let's go to Key West and do a private party. Hell yeah, absolutely, man. Let's go do it. So it's just doing stuff now that's going to be fun, you know? and still working hard. I mean, there's a lot of music yet to be made. There's a lot of projects. There's a lot of educational things that we're looking at doing that we haven't done yet. And, you know, the list of projects will never end. And that's what being a creative or, you know, owning your own business, really, it has nothing to do with the arts and music. It's anybody that owns their own business. If you're passionate about making candles, you know, then you're always thinking about that. You're not working at a 9-to-5, more, you know, conventional American work week, where when you get off at 5 o'clock from working, and not that there's anything wrong with this, but, you know, say you work at Office Depot or something, not that there's anything wrong with that at all, but probably you're not thinking about ways that you can help Office Depot streamline their business when you wake up at midnight or 4 o'clock in the morning. But if you own your own business and you wake up in the middle of the night, the first thing you're thinking about is some sort of idea or something that you can do or something like that. And you might even have a notepad by your bed where you wake up and have an idea and you're writing this stuff down. So a career with something that you're really passionate about is with you 24 hours a day for the rest of your life. It's not something that you want to forget about at 5 o'clock every day and go to the bar and drink, you know, 10 beers to forget about it, you know. And that's why guys like, and I use these names because these are friends of mine, and those are the best examples I have, and I see it in them, and it's inspiring. But, you know, I've known John Oates for 20 plus years. Billy Gibbons has become a really good friend in the past couple of years. And man, these guys are, they could have, all those guys, Vince Gill, any guys that are older that have had an amazing career, epic career, they could have called in a long time ago, 20 years ago. They could have called in and gone, you know what, man, I'm retiring, I'm done. But they don't, and they're still going, and they're still as excited about it as ever. They're the first people to the sound check. They're the first ones to tell you about a new pedal that they got or something. Hey, how are we doing? They're still, at this point in their career, they're showing up like they're 20 years old, and they're still trying to dial stuff in and get better, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what a real artist is. It's somebody like Paul Simon or Bob Dylan, and I'm using these older names because I always look up to the legends, and you don't get to be that cool and that smart until you're that old. And so I looked at guys like that. It's like, man, Bob Dylan still tours the world. These guys don't know what to do with it when they're not playing. Paul Simon made all that, you know, incredible music and had this amazing career. And then he kept going, kept reinventing himself, working with Brian Eno and doing all these really awesome records. And they just keep going. They don't write a batch of songs and then stop. You know, it's forward movement all the time because life is short.
You consistently say that one of your favorite guitar recordings is the Ry Cooder record, specifically the very thing that makes you rich, that makes Her Rich Will Make You Poor.
Yeah, great record.
You've referenced this. What do you love about that record and that song?
That whole record, Bop Till You Drop, is just great. I think that record is actually the first digital audio recording as well. If I'm not mistaken,
somebody in the comments is going to tell us if we're right or wrong.
Of course
about
they will.
That.
And yeah. I think I'm right on that. If not the first, it was one of the very first. And so it's just a great record. I mean, he was still playing a Strat, and there's just a lot of really great music on that record. I mean,
Where have you learned that? Like, have you transcribed that stuff or like?
I never have. I mean, rather than learning that stuff note for note, I just would try to. I would try to take a little bit of the spirit of it. You know?
What's the spirit of it? Like, can you even demonstrate it, or is it so hard?
I can't really demonstrate it. It's just I just get a great feeling from that music, you know? I mean, it's just
his tone on that record is incredible, isn't it?
His playing and his tone and his whole, you know, the drummer that he used forever, Jim Keltner, and just the way those records sound and the playing that's on those records and the songs. I mean, it's just good music, you know, and it's very, and here's the thing about it is too, that I love about it. It's very unique. I mean, it's extremely unique. And so that's kind of what I strive for. Not that I could compare myself to somebody like that at all, but again, we're not trying to copy these guys, but we're taking the ideas and the spirit of it and trying to inflect a little bit of all those spices and flavors that we like in life into our own personal, you know, singular artistic voice, you know, for
where's the Latin influence come from in your playing? Like any artists or records in particular that you really took it from, or how did that seep in?
Yeah. I love that music, and especially the Cuban salsa.
Who are you listening to get that influence?
Well, Ry Cooder was the first one that really made that music popular to a lot of Americans, I think, because he did the Buena Vista Social Club, where he went down and made that record. He did the Mambo Sinuendo with Manuel Galban, which is a super, super amazing record. He kind of brought that music to the attention of a lot of Americans that probably wouldn't have found it on their own. I had some guys from New York a long time ago kind of turn me on to some of that stuff. And I really got into it because even more so than like Brazilian music, you know, Brazilian music is beautiful and incredible, but there's something about the Puerto Rican salsa and the Cuban salsa that is directly related to African music, of course, but it's got a little bit of everything. It's darker, it's kind of bluesier, it's more minor kind of vibes. You're getting everything that a musician could hope for. You're getting complex syncopated rhythmic content. You're getting amazing harmony and melodic content. You're getting a lot of soul. Just all those things. It's kind of like a buffet for all the things that musicians want to hear.
Can you demo some of the Brazilian influence and some of the Latin influence?
I don't have any of the Brazilian stuff, but the Cuban stuff is very. Of course, when you get into some of the Afro-Cuban jazz, it gets very complicated. But the more traditional Cuban stuff is just a lot of it's based on, you know, like if I played A minor, D minor, E7, A minor. Well, in a standard song, you'd go, okay, well, you know, those chords, it's kind of a minor bluesy sound. But if you go like, you know, if you take that three chord progression and you add something like this, you know, and then you take that up here, and then those chords will be going, just those little things. That's three chords, but if you put the little twist on it, that's the Latin.
Yeah.
That's the Latin stuff. And then you hear this all the time. I mean, you've heard if you take an A minor 7 and play a D9, you've heard that change a million times. But if you add this little triad, you know, you add that, just walking that down, and then you add a little rhythm to that. Just those little lines. Just those little ideas and I use that stuff all over the place, you know, just the flavor of it.
Just to get it.
But I love that
music. Where do you use that? Like, does that work great if you're doing like a chicken picking thing and you throw that in and all of a sudden it takes the listener's ear out of it? Like, where do you put that stuff in?
Yeah, like even if I'm playing over something that we would consider like maybe like a more country or American blues kind of vibe, you know, A7, D7, A7, E7. When you go to the 5 chord, perfect place to build some tension. So you're playing an E7, dominant, resolving back to the 1. If I am playing over that E7 chord, you know, that's all over E7.
Yeah.
And it resolves back to A.
Yeah.
So I can build that tension on that E chord with those kind of ideas as long as you want, you know.
I've heard you say
it's a fun place to put it in without, I'm not a trained musician and I'm not definitely not a jazz player. But I love, you know, some of those, of course, those influences and the flavor of that music, some of the vocabulary. But that'd be a perfect spot, you know, in like just a 3-chord song over the 5-chord. You could incorporate some of those ideas, you know, and it'd be fine.
I've heard you say in an interview, which I think is such a great point, that sometimes you don't like those crazy, flashy, maybe jazz licks or outside licks, because to you, it just sounds like some guy learned the lick and then waited for the moment to put it in. and then threw it into the solo. But then how are you supposed to get those notes and get that playing otherwise?
Yeah. Well,
so where's the balance?
Well, I think it's just, I think it's kind of being authentic. And so if you're a real jazz musician and you've learned, you know, that vocabulary inside and out, like your boy that you're going to introduce or that you're going to interview in New York, we're not going to say who it is, but you know, one of the greatest, most masterful of fretboard knowledge ever. You know, if you have that vocabulary really down, then you're able to improvise in those ways. But if I just go learn some like slick, half hole diminished run or something that works over this chord in this situation only, then that's not really improvising. I've got that lick in my back pocket and I'm waiting to use it on like this song over this change. And when you do that, it immediately sounds like you're thinking too much and that you work that out at your house. And we all have these ideas and these things that we're going to go to, because we're not just creating, not everybody's a genius. And so we're not just creating all this amazing new stuff every time you pick up the guitar. Everybody just has, you know, layers of vocabulary. And so I'm just connecting all these things together. And it sounds like it's a lot, but it's really, to me, it's just the same stuff I've been doing, just elaborating on it. But that's kind of the thing to me. If you play from a very analytical place, then your playing is going to sound very analytical. And if you play off the seat of your pants and in a energetic, you know, live music kind of way in the moment, then your music's going to be energetic and have some soul and some feeling to it. You might make more mistakes than the next guy.
I was going to say, how do you get through the mistakes? Like, don't you have to learn the licks first in order to be able to break out of them?
Yeah, you want to be able to learn. You know, you can't just go, like, all crazy. But, you know, I would rather make some mistakes and really go for it and try to have some energy and some feeling than play it safe, you know? And so, you know, with the trio, I can do that because it's our band. But if I was backing up an artist, backing up a singer in like a quintessential Nashville fashion, well, then I wouldn't do that. You know, so it's just all about I wouldn't play a bunch of Latin licks if I was backing, you know, if I was playing with Alison Krauss or something, you know, unless the song called for it. But, you know, so it's all situational, you know, and I think that Nashville really teaches you that too, because it is such a song heavy town. So that those trimming the fat qualities that, you know, if you go to some other city and you go stumble into some bar and some band's in there playing and they're jamming on an A minor chord for 30 minutes and they don't know how to get out of it, those are the things that Nashville really teaches you quickly, is it's about the song. You know, trim out anything that's not high in musical nutrients and let's get let's say something and get out and get on to the next thing. And that translates into instrumental music, experimental music also. They're still songs, you know. So it's all related to me.
Yeah. Tom Bukovac said when you guys were interviewed on Rick Beato, he said that you convinced him to buy, I think it's 58 Les Paul.
He says that. I can't remember that.
You don't remember that?
I don't remember that.
Do you remember
that.
Playing the guitar?
Yeah, I think so. I think I was down at his house, but I don't know if I could take credit for him buying the guitar. But that's what he says, yeah, so I'm not going to argue with him. But
did he show you, the other thing that was said was, you said you guys were going to drive back from that interview, and you said, Tom, play me some rock and roll. Has he played you any rock and roll?
No, we didn't. We ended up talking about something else the whole way back. But I did, I've known him for a long time, but not often do you get to be in a car for 4 hours just with two people. I mean, even if you go on a, even if you're playing a gig out of town, you've still got four or five guys with you. But me and him together in the car was great to have some conversation. But we didn't listen to one note of music all the way down and all the way back, because we were just talking. So when we were down in Atlanta, he knows I did not grow up playing any classic rock or cover songs. And so I don't really have much of a rock and roll knowledge, you know. Maybe a little bit of the spirit, but not really the history of the music and all the guitar parts and all the Beatles songs and all that stuff that everybody else does. But so I asked him, I said, hey, man, would you just give me a little crash course for 30 minutes driving back to Nashville? Like, give me your top, you know.
But you didn't do
critics' picks of rock songs that I need to know. And we didn't do it. One day I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it one day.
That would be a great video, actually. The two of you guys going through the essential rock songs.
Yeah, and I could ask them some questions. I mean, I'd be like, you know, I'd be like a little kid asking them, like, hey, man, tell me some things about this music. I mean, I know nothing about, like, plugging a Les Paul into a Marshall amp. I wouldn't know. I'd be like, you know, I'd be crippled.
But what do you guys talk about when you're driving home from Atlanta?
Oh, man, just all.
Who knows?
You know, like, just life stuff. Like, you know, about him, you know, him having two kids, me not having any kids. And so we get into that conversation. I'm like, man, what's that like? You know, and he tells me some stories about that. And like, you know, how, you know, that's a life changer, obviously. And so in a great way. And so, you know, just things like that, really kind of deep life shit. And of course there's some laughs and stuff too, but man, it's so, it's fun to get in a car with somebody like that and have, and taking a little road trip and just being able to cover any subject that comes up, you know, it's fun, man. You know,
you and Billy,
quality time,
quality time. What's happening next week? At the time of this recording, you're going to Hawaii.
Oh yeah,
Billy
we
can Gibbons.
Talk about that. Yeah, so we're going to Hawaii next week. Going to Honolulu. So I've been to every state in this music thing.
You've never been to Hawaii. This is so.
I've
weird
been to every state in the United States except Hawaii, and so I can cross that one off the list. Even Alaska a couple times, but so I'm looking forward to that. Never been, and obviously it's a huge honor and distinct pleasure to share that experience with the
one
and only
Billy Gibbons.
What are you
talking about
with
Billy Gibbons? Like, do you ever have those Tom Bukaback conversations with Billy? Like,
oh my God.
Does he have kids? Does Billy have kids?
No kids.
So what do you talk about with Billy that's not music related?
Man, well, again, he's still super excited about all the music stuff. So we do talk about some guitars and pedals and stuff like that. But mainly it's like food and these experiences, and he loves to get on the phone and look at, you know, different, you know, things of all sorts. I mean, you know, he'll talk about, you know, we'll talk about, you know, so a lot of subjects. I mean, a lot of stuff. He's a very extremely sharp and an interesting human being like none I've ever met before. It's very unique. And so, and very on top of it and very sharp. And so, you know, and extremely down to earth and very, very, very gracious with his time. I've never seen anybody like that. He will not ever rush somebody in any situation. And dude, I've been with him at Trader Joe's. You know, I've been with him at the gas station where he's, you know, will buy stuff for people. And he's constantly sending, you know, people things. And so we were at the Fender grand opening of the Fender showroom that's here in East Nashville, and me and Billy went to that thing together. When we left, Billy goes, "Man, there's a turnip truck over here somewhere, isn't there? The little like kind of like our version of Whole Foods, our little health food store." And I went, "Yeah, man, right down the street." And he goes, "Well, let's swing in there, man. I'm looking for this hot sauce." And he shows me a photo of it. And he's like, "I was like, yeah, man, let's go in there." So we go in there, and I go there every day. And I walk in there, and we're walking around, and I see this lady who's a little older, and she's working there, and she looks at me, and she goes, "Really? Like this guy?" And I went, "Yeah, you know." And so and she walks up, and she was kind of tearing up. She goes, "I just want to tell you, thank you so much for all the great music." And I swear to God, we were in there for 45 minutes, and he was talking to this woman about tamales and hot sauce for 45 minutes without any rush to get out of there.
Okay, but for you, don't you kind of go, "Come on, Billy, wrap it up. What are we doing here? You could have given her 10 minutes. That would have been plenty. Yeah, I got to get out of here." Isn't that what's going through your head?
I know it. Well, yeah, it starts to, and then you stop and realize, man, what a huge lesson that is, because if he's able to slow down and take his, and be patient with somebody and to talk to him for that long, it's really incredible. I mean, kids, and it just doesn't matter. He's just a really unique guy that I think once you get to know him, there's a lot of lessons there, man. I mean, he's not a diva by any means. It's really, really cool and refreshing to be around him. And, oh, man, Oates is the same way, just an awesome, awesome dude. All those guys that are that are like that. Vince, all the not to say older, but all the guys that are older than me that we look up to, man, 9 times out of 10, they're awesome human beings. You know, they got nothing to prove.
How do you back up Billy Gibbons?
But we're going to Hawaii. Yeah.
We're going to Hawaii.
We're
going
to go to the Blue Note. We're doing 3 nights with not ZZ Top, but with the BFGs, which is Chris Layton from Stevie Ray Vaughan's band that you guys have seen forever. And they call him Whipper. And so, and then Mike Flanagan, who will be on the B3 organ. So it's kind of an organ trio. And I'm just getting up to play the last 3 songs of 3 nights with them. So we'll do 16, 17, 18. And I'll just play the last 3 songs with him kind of as a special guest. So
what songs are you going to do?
I have no idea.
What do you do? Because I there was a video that just came out where you were backing up Billy and you were playing ZZ Top songs. And he threw it to you a couple times and you kind of solo.
Yeah. Solo a little bit.
In that ZZ Top style.
Yeah.
How do you do that? What do you think about when you get thrown a solo in a Billy Gibbons ZZ Top style song?
I just kind of try to be respectful of the style, but also not try to sound like Billy Gibbons.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to just do my kind of like... what I would do in that genre of music, which is pretty much blues, you know. I'm not going to try to sound like anybody else, but I want to, you know, you have especially at the Lifetime Achievement Award ceremony we did, where I knew I only had a couple, you know, you just get a minute, you know, to do your thing. So you got to come out, you got to kind of come out guns blazing a little bit.
Give us a guns blazing. Yeah. I know you're on an acoustic, but can you give us like a guns blazing?
Oh God, man.
To come out with.
I don't know on this thing, but I was going to tell you, what was I going to tell you about that Lifetime thing? Well,
Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah. So that's
a
where,
minute to come out guns blazing.
Yeah. So in that situation, you know, that is not a time to kind of like, you don't want to overemphasize the humility in a situation like that. You want to acknowledge that of course you're going to be humble and respectful. But if you're playing LaGrange with Billy Gibbons and there's 20 other people on stage and you have a spotlight moment to stand out and take a solo, then that's the moment where you don't go over the top and start playing with your teeth and shit, but you gotta put it into fifth or sixth gear and kind of make your statement at that point, you know? So it's a fine line to navigate through that world, but that's the experience too, you know? So I've seen some people that were younger and not quite as experienced, and I'm not saying this myself, but just all of our peers at 40, 50, 60 years old, and they come out guns blazing, but it's a little too much, and they might even step on their tail a little bit. And so there's a fine line. You kind of got to know how to navigate through those situations. And it's fun to be a little older and have a little bit of experience. I still don't know shit, but I it's fun to have just enough experience to where your confidence is it's a healthy dose of confidence. Let's just say that.
Right.
You know, it's not overconfident. We still all know. I know where I fit in the food chain in Nashville as a guitar player and the world. And I think that's a very healthy thing to always keep.
Where do you fit? Where do you think you fit in your mind?
Oh, I don't know. Somewhere in here, you know.
Somewhere between here and here, somewhere here.
Between here and here. But, you know.
No,
I mean,
come on. But you have to feel confident.
I think that's important, though. I think it's important to circle back every once in a while and just, you know.
Wait, but you have to feel confident in your ability as a guitar player, right?
I mean, I do. Yeah, I do. But I know I know what my lanes are, you know.
That's what it is.
I know what the lane is. So I'm not going to put myself in a situation that I don't feel comfortable in, you know. And I know what those situations are. And sometimes it's fun to bend the rules a little bit, but for the most part, you know, and I'm not a guy that likes to play it safe, but I like to have my parameters and feel comfortable. I love playing with the trio. That's the most fun I've had in my life is playing with this trio.
When you play with the trio, how do you set your guitar tone to fill all that space? Is there an EQ trick that you think about? But there's gotta be something to fill that sound. How is the tone different in a trio versus some other setting you might be
in? I don't think it's so much of a tone thing as far as like an EQ thing or anything. I think, as long as you have a good tone and you're not like over exaggerated in the bass or the high end, I think it's just having a nice a nice tone. What I do kind of have to have is the amount of headroom in an amp. And so I was using a deluxe reverb for a long time, as many people do. And if I was, again, if I was backing up an artist or more in an ensemble setting where there might be another guitar player or a steel player or a keyboard player or something like that, and I'm backing up a singer or it's not my gig, then a deluxe reverb or a smaller amp might be fine. But when I do the trio thing, to your point, since it is only three guys, I moved up to and started using my old Pro Reverb again, which is for all the gear people out there. It's just a 212 amp. It's a great Fender amp, and it's just more having more power. So for me to have that extra power, it really kind of drives that trio, as well as having to, Jordan is an amazing drummer. Tim Marks knows how to play the bass. He's not approaching this trio in a fusion jazz sense where he's trying to play all these notes. And so it really works in a way that is kind of experimental, original, unique, homemade electric guitar music, but it's approached in a way that is really coming from me being a roots kind of influenced musician, but liking to open my mind into these other territories. And that combined with a drummer that can play anything on the planet, and it keeps it very, very interesting and pushing it forward and energetic and moving. And then the bass player who can also play anything he wants, but chooses to do his job and really, really play nice lines, but he's holding down the sonic foundation of the bass, which is the bass players. If they're a great bass player, they're not playing up here, they're playing down here. And so, and then I'm able to kind of float on that and take some chances and stuff. And that to me is the most satisfying thing musically. And I love playing with my friends and singers and stuff too, of course. But the trio is where I can really kind of like go out of my mind, you know. And that's really where we're all trying to get to. We just want to go out of our minds.
So, but with the Pro Reverb, does the extra headroom mean that you can get louder and the amp stays cleaner longer?
Yeah, the low end stays low full. I've got plenty of power. And the way that amp is configured is it's pretty stock Pro Reverb, but I have a Alessandro 12, which is a higher wattage speaker able to take the power. And then over to the right, Todd Sharp suggested to get the feel of that Fender back, that nice natural compression kind of squashed, you know, chewy, squashy kind of Fender compression thing that makes those amps feel so good. We put a Vox Blue speaker in there, which kind of, so you've got one kind of lower powered speaker and one higher powered speaker, and it just tones that amp back down a little bit and lets it feel really good. But man, I love that amplifier. And it's just kind of a basic setup, you know, Fender amp, reverb, minimal pedal setup, but mainly plugged straight into the amp, you know. But yeah, having the clean headroom is definitely something that's a game changer.
Yeah. Okay, we're running out of time here.
Of course.
We were playing, right when we were setting up, you were playing like a Django kind of jazz lick, like a gypsy jazz thing. Yeah. What was that lick? Can you play that lick?
Oh my God, let me see if I can pull it off. This is ridiculous because I would never just play this lick.
No, but just give it to us. Who cares? Come on.
Let's see if I can do it. So, key of G.
Something Wait, go like a little that. Slower though. What is that? What are you thinking about?
Something like
are
that.
Are you thinking about the cage system? No, I don't fucking know. What are you thinking about?
This is not a musical exercise here, ladies and gentlemen.
What are you thinking about with that leg?
This is acrobatic.
Where'd you get that leg from? What is that?
This is like acrobatics. It's kind of a Django inspired lick. I think Brian Sutton actually showed me this lick.
Really?
A long time ago. But it's the key of G. It's just basically, going through all the octaves. The lick, but fast. That's the hard part.
Do you ever break that? Have you ever broken that out in anything, or that's just what is that?
No, every once in a while I'll throw something like that in there, but yeah, I mean, you know, that's like a party trick. That's like a bar trick.
Do you have another party trick that you can give, that you can lay on us? I'm putting you on the spot here.
Oh man, what's a good?
Is there a great open string lick
really.
Or like a? That's not really your.
Not really. I don't know a lot many open string things, but
I see you do them though. What do you mean you don't know them?
Man, I don't know. I try to get away from that. So I used to stand on tables and shit when I was young, and you know all these crazy things. I try to not do that anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, can you give us a little tune, maybe like a fiddle tune or something off?
Let's do
Moving in Stereo.
Yeah. Let's see. What would be a good thing to kind of end out?
Don't play The Window because you played that last time. No, you played this last time.
I did.
Last time you were on the show, you played that song. You gotta play something else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. how horrible. Did I do this one? Let's see. This is good for the acoustic.
That's off your first record,
that's
right?
A little Buck Dancer's Choice. Yeah, just Buck a little fan. So we'll play that with the trio. It turns into kind of a more of an African crazy thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
Guthrie Trapp on the podcast for the fourth time.
Guthrie. Unbelievable. That means I'm getting old.
Yes. Me too.
Thank you, buddy. Guthrie, always a pleasure.
We share, you're going to be traveling. I travel all the time with the guitar through BNA.
Right.
It's such a struggle, isn't it, through BNA? Do you experience this? Going through security.
It's almost comical.
It's almost comical how bad
how
it is.
How ironic it is that the town that has more logos, even your plumbing company has a guitar as a logo.
Yeah.
The guitar has never been more present in any city ever. It's Guitar Town.
This is Guitar Town.
And the new airport that we love, I mean, who doesn't like a nice new airport? But all the security, you know, TSA, pre-check, whatever, wherever you're at when you go through security, of course, all the X-ray machines, the new ones, a guitar, even a Telecaster in a gig bag, won't fit through there.
So they have to take it
it's out.
It's embarrassing. They take your guitar.
I find it a little degrading as a professional musician. I'm a hard semi-pro. But to be standing there and have them take the instrument out of the case, it there's something about it. It's an invasion of your privacy or something.
Well, also
there's things that have been in that gig bag for 25 years and they're taking it out, and I'm like, man, you got to put that back, you know, the way that it was in
there. And it's like, how valuable are these instruments? And they take them out, and then some TSA person's holding them, who's well intentioned, but they don't know how to hold this stuff. It's like,
no, they don't. And I don't think you know if you're, you know, I don't know. I don't care who you are. Anybody in this city that's traveling with an instrument, they should have figured that out. But to our point earlier, because I just don't want to complain about it without having some sort of some sort of remedy.
We're not trying to get on a no-fly list here.
No, we don't want
to
do that.
We're trying to help.
Right. But so if you're going into the security, if you go all the way down to the right to the end, like down where the wall is. There's two original X-ray machines that they kept for some reason. Maybe they knew what they were doing all along. But if you go down to that side, you can run your guitar through there and you won't have any problems. But it's still a pain in the ass because if you're TSA pre-check, sometimes you want to be able to be TSA pre-check.
Yeah.
Without having to go through that. But
anyway, this is ridiculous.
We'll see what happens.
Here's the other thing. Yeah, give me the other 10.
To that point, you know how to get a musician to complain, don't you?
No.
Give them a gig.
Give them a gig.
You know how to really get them to complain? Feed them at the gig.
Feed them at the gig. That's it. Guthrie Trapp, here's the point.
Thanks, buddy.
I'm wrapping this up. I'm not done yet. I'm going to plug you a little bit. Okay. Here's the point. Guthrie Trapp has a YouTube channel himself where he posts all these things, posts his thoughts and playing. You got to follow the YouTube channel.
Yeah. Tons of useless knowledge.
If you're watching this before February, you got to go Chicago for the Guitar
party happening in Chicago. 2 days, Tom Bukovac, Guthrie Trapp,
Jed Hughes, Nick
Jed
Govert,
Hughes, Jimmy everyone Wallace, else.
Tim
Guthrie,
Marks.
Guthrie, hold on, I'm doing the plug.
Jordan,
you don't have
Carlson.
Any lines here. This is my part. Guthrie's album, Moving in
you,
Stereo.
Man.
That's already out with Tom Bukovac. It's already out.
That's out. Yeah.
And you should have already bought it.
We'll be releasing some new music, and there'll be new education courses coming down the pike this year.
Oh, my God. The education courses, too. Mm-hmm. People have to go and check those out.
Yeah, we've got some new stuff coming. And then, there'll be a lot of fun trips and a lot of new music. So the adventure continues.
Why do you have the world's smallest guitar collection?
You have, I don't know, man.
It always blows my mind. I go to your house, you have one telly, basically.
I know it.
And a couple other little things.
That's it.
Why?
I don't know, man. That's
People don't send you more free stuff to play?
I always send it back.
You send it back? What do you mean? Are you serious?
I'm a one-trick pony, man. I got one guitar that I like.
Oh,
it's
my
It's really
God.
Stupid.
All right, we're wrapping it up here with Guthrie Trapp.
Thanks, guys.
Dude, thanks for coming on.
Of course. Anytime, man.
We'll see you next
time. Always a pleasure.